Hello, everyone. Welcome once again back here to the Preachers Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I am coming to you from The Rock here in North Wales, where I live with my wife, Lisa. In fact, we've just returned from a great holiday to Italy, where we celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary. It's amazing to think that she's put up with me for that long. But yes, it's been a quarter of a century that I've been married. I am excited to bring you today's episode here on the Preachers Forum podcast. This is part of a series that I've been doing called Mind Shift, which is all about changing or at least challenging the ways in which we think, the way we see life, the way we view God, theology, the church, religion, spirituality, and so much more. And that's, of course, the aim here of the Preachers Forum podcast. It's all about critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality. This episode marks a major milestone for this podcast. This is episode number 40, and I am excited to be bringing you this episode today. I recently had a chance to sit down with a fellow colleague of mine and good friend, Mark Allen Shelsky, who has just come out with a brand new book on the 1st of September. And it is called The Wisdom of Your Heart, Discovering the God-Given Purpose and Power of Your Emotions. And it's really a reflection of Mark's own journey. We've been friends now. We talk about this a little bit in the episode coming up in a few minutes, but we've known each other professionally and personally for some 13 or 14 years now. If you listen to my Rock and Roll Soul series of podcasts, which begins back at about episode number 3, which are both available on Podbean as well as on my website, preachersforum.com, I kind of obliquely mention that there was another church when I was pastoring in Portland that we came across, and it turned out that they didn't have any building. They were kind of a wandering nomadic sort of church. And Mark was the associate pastor of the church at that time. This is about 15 or 16 years ago, I guess. And it turned out that we were able to work it out so that this church, which is called Bridge City Community Church, they were actually able to rent our building, and we shared the building with them. They had services on Saturday, and we held services on Sunday, and we both had our offices. They were upstairs. And it was really great to get to know Mark. He was the associate pastor and then later on became the head pastor of Bridge City. And we became friends. We used to go to lunch and hang out. And we kind of helped prop each other up through some of the stuff that they went through and some of the things that we went through as our church closed. And I talk about this a little bit more in my series. But I've known Mark, as I say, for a long time. And I've watched his journey, especially on Facebook. I remember several years back when he was really excited about getting a contract to write this book, and then now to see it actually come to fruition and that it's been published. And I'm really glad that I was able to schedule a Skype chat with Mark a few weeks ago and talk about this book. And as I read through the book, I'll be honest with you, I kind of was thinking when I saw the title for the first time, I thought, oh, it's all about emotions, you know, it's kind of one of these touchy-feely books where we sit in a circle and talk about how we feel. But it actually turns out to be an amazingly practical, very helpful book. And it really makes you realize that there's a lot of really bad theology, there's a lot of really bad teaching out there. And I've also written a little companion article on this book. It's kind of a book review, and it'll give you a little bit of a synopsis. But I really encourage you to go out and get the book, because it makes you realize that there's a lot of teaching in churches, statements like, you know, God doesn't have emotions, and neither should you as a Christian. A good Christian really should think with their head and not so much with their heart. You can't trust your emotions. Emotions are fickle. Emotions are dangerous things. And the truth is that that's actually not the case. And Mark does a really good job of kind of systematically walking through in a very practical way, showing how reason has been exalted above emotions, and that we as Christians, oftentimes we're quite divided. We tend to be more living in the head than in the heart. But the truth is, he says, we have emotions because God does too. And Jesus exhibited emotions as well. And these oftentimes get explained away or disqualified somehow. But actually, Emotions are a gift that God has given us because that's how he made us. And this is something that we have emotions. We need to learn how to read them, how to understand them, not to be afraid of them, but actually to embrace them and find a balance between emotional maturity and spiritual maturity. The fact of the matter is that you cannot claim to be spiritually mature while at the same time be emotionally immature. And there are a whole lot of Christians running around churches that claim to be spiritually mature because they know the content of the Bible and they know a whole lot of theological doctrines, but they are emotionally immature. And we see this all too often in some of the absolutely terrible ways that Christians treat each other. And this is a hallmark, says Mark, of the lack of emotional maturity in a person's life. This is the substance of the conversation that I'm going to bring you in a minute between myself and Mark Allen Shelsky, the author of this book, The Wisdom of Your Heart. I will say at the end of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit more about how you can get a hold of myself and Mark on social media. Also, how you can support the work of the Preachers Forum podcast for as little as a dollar a month on Patreon. So stay tuned for that at the end of the conversation with me and Mark. So without further ado, let's get right into it. I want to bring you this conversation with Mark Allen Shelsky as we discuss his brand new book, The Wisdom of Your Heart, Discovering the God-Given Purpose and Power of Your Emotions, right here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I'm here with Mark Allen Shelsky. He is the author of a brand new book that's coming out. Did you say it was coming out literally on the 1st of September?
Released on the 1st of September.
Yeah, so when this episode airs, it will have been out a couple of weeks. So hopefully we can encourage people to go check out your book. I've been working my way through this book. It's very helpful. It's incredibly practical, very helpful book. So I'll put that shameless promotional plug right in at the beginning. But now, how did Mark and I meet? Now, this is a funny story. I'm not just interviewing you because you're coming out with a new book. That is why we're talking about this. But the fact is, our relationship goes back, how many years ago did we meet?
Yeah, it's at least 15, and I want to say maybe 16 on the edge of 17.
Yes. If anyone's listened to my Rock and Roll Soul podcast series, I sort of mentioned you guys obliquely in there. I didn't get too much into, but what happened was, it must have been 16 or 15 years ago, our church in Portland took in the wandering Bridge City Community Church, and at the time, yeah, you were an associate pastor. Isn't that
right?
And then the head pastor left, and you took over as head pastor. How long has it been since you became the head pastor there?
Gosh, let's see. Probably, I would say I became senior pastor. I think it's probably close to 12 or 13 years. And then we had a leadership transition kind of in our model about 4.5 or 5 years ago. And so now I'm one of the elders of the elder team. My primary responsibility is teaching, but we all work together on the elders at the church. And it's been a long, long journey being a part of ministry in this one body for getting close to 19 years.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that our relationship goes back 15 or 16 years. We worked together in the same building for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
and
I think
then
that's right.
Our church closed, and I left, and I moved over here to Great Britain, and then Bridge City, which the church that you were the pastor of at the time, you guys bought the building and are still there. So it's an amazing story. It really is. I'm so glad that you guys ended up in that building, not just because you needed a home, but because you guys, we said at the time, you had far more ownership of the building in terms of, taking care of it and having a heart for that community than we ever did. So I think you guys were the ones that needed to be in that place. And I'm super happy that you're still there and I played a really small part somehow in that. I wasn't trying to close our church down and so you guys could have the building. That wasn't the plan.
I think we all learned an awful lot about church and community in that 3 or 4 year period. You know, there was a lot of dynamics, a lot of leadership issues, a lot of lessons learned for both our church and your church and in our relationship together in that 3 or 4 year period.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what your perspective on it was, and I know that's really not why we're talking about it. Maybe we could do a podcast on another day about that, because that's a huge piece. You know, but you're absolutely right. That's that experience, I guess Richard Rohr would say, that's what kick-started me into what you would say is the second half of life, you know, in that language. I didn't have the language then, but as I look back on it now, 12, 13 years later, it was extremely traumatic. And I think your book does relate to what I went through, because as I read your book, talking about your own frustrations and the burnout and things you experienced as a pastor, as a leader, and not really being in touch with your emotional side, you know, I can look back on my life and say, yeah, I can so totally identify with what Mark was talking about in terms of this book.
Well, I think both of us had a similar experience even, because I think that the way that most people envision the church currently, certainly the modern American church, and I think it's true wherever that model has been exported, the expectations that the church has of the role of pastor are expectations that set people up for emotional failure. The pastor role is expected to be, you know, a counselor, a companion, a therapist, a quality presenter, a teacher, HR professional. In the situation with the building, you're also expected to be a facilities manager. If your church is starting new programs, you're expected to be entrepreneurial. You may be expected to have certain business or financial savvy, all of these things. And very, very, very few people are cut out to do all of those things well. And most of the people who are cut out to do a lot of those things well are also not cut out well to be shepherds. And so you have the situation where you have leaders who are trying to get things done and build an organization and make sure people are happy. And then you add into that complicated personal and emotional dynamics. Like, many people who are in ministry are, for one reason or another, people pleasers. You know, they find a personal value in taking care of people and helping people. And that's a wonderful gift to bring the world, but it's also an emotional hook that can put you on the hook for people's baggage and pain that isn't yours. And if you don't have the tools to know how to process that, you take all that onto your shoulders. And so then you have a job that's nearly impossible to do in terms of the number of hours. It's nearly impossible to do in terms of the expectations. You can't be great at all of those things. And emotionally, many of us are not equipped to handle the emotional load that comes with all of that. And so then you find yourself as a pastor, you got into this because you love people, you got into it because you love Jesus, you wanted to grow a church and make an impact in the world for the gospel, and then you find yourself in this place where you're bitter and frustrated with your church members, and you're not supposed to feel that, and you're feeling isolated and alone, and why would that be? We talk about community, we're building a community, I'm in the center of a community, how can I be alone when I'm surrounded by all these people? You know, and all of this stuff mounts up, and the result is that, you know, something like 1,500 pastors leave the ministry every month because something breaks in the system. And a lot of times it comes down to the issues that we talk about in The Wisdom of Your Heart, that they just simply are not equipped to listen to what's happening in their internal landscape, to hear the possibility that God might be talking to them about limits or about their own personal story and how maybe they're inflicting their own story on their church members and their own personal growth. You know, pastors, quite frankly, don't have time for spiritual growth because they're so busy focused on caring for people and keeping the program rolling. And spiritual growth takes time. It takes Sabbath. It takes listening and reflection and contemplation. And most pastors just simply don't have time to do that. And so you end up in a place where I think both of us experienced in different ways a wall where you get to the place and you just simply cannot do any more what the expectations are set up for you to do. And that's a terrible, frightening, broken place to be.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I can remember, and I talk about this in one of my Rock and Roll Soul series, that, you know, I used to come into my office on a Sunday morning completely emotionally done. I was gone. And I would sit there and listen to gospel music on my speakers through my computer, trying to buoy myself up to go out and face those people out there, knowing I had to preach a sermon, knowing I had to deal with everybody's problems. And I was completely running on empty for a long time.
Right.
And I mean, that's a very dark place to be as a pastor. And I would sit there and I would say exactly what you said. How in the world did it come to this? What am I doing? I was hoping to change the world. I wanted to be a pastor and a teacher and a scholar and all these wonderful things. And I'm completely burned out. And I didn't. And the thing that I like about your book is that it talks about how you get in touch with those emotions. I mean, those emotions, you say, always tell us the truth. The problem is, of course, we don't know how to interpret those emotions. You know, and so it's like that. You say it's the check engine light on your car. There's a problem, you know, but we don't know what it is. And we're probably afraid to find out what the problem really is, you know, but we have this emotional check engine light and it manifests itself in a lot of different ways, some of which are self-destructive behavior and other things, aren't they?
Right. Well, that's exactly it. You know, I the book is not written, you know, directly to pastors or about church dynamics. But I really hope that pastors will read it, because I think one of the things that creates an enormous struggle for churches, and I think both, again, both churches, yours and mine, in that time experienced this, is that the church as a body, as a family system, isn't equipped to deal with difficult situations or conflict. You know, we're wired up to avoid discomfort. We hate it. And the fact is that growth of any kind, spiritual growth, numerical growth in a church, growth of any kind automatically means change. Change automatically means loss. Like, so think, for example, about a growing church. You know, the church was 75 people at one point, and 2 or 3 years later, it's 200 people. And almost every pastor would think, that's wonderful, the blessing of the Lord, this is great. Well, it is great in one way, but it's also a loss. Right? When your church was 75 people, everyone had a certain level of intimate relationship. And now that your church is 200 people, that's just not possible anymore. And even though you may like a church of 200 people better than a church of 75, you've lost a dynamic. And when you lose something, there's pain around that. You have to grieve that. And if you don't grieve it yourself, and if you don't allow your people to grieve it, if you don't talk about it honestly, then that pain is going to come out in other ways. It's going to come out in bitterness. It's going to come out in resistance. It's going to come out in people who just don't want to go along with the program, and you don't know why, and you can't figure it out, and they won't tell you the truth about it. You know, or, you know, you have a leadership team, maybe an elder team, and you've got some crisis that you have to solve. And the chances are you don't all agree. You know, you don't agree on the right path. Well, that's conflict. Even if we're trying to be nice to each other, even if no one's using mean words, it's still conflict. And conflict for many of us, because of our stories, it is uncomfortable. And stuff bubbles up inside. You know, you get that twisty feeling in your stomach, or you get that tension across your shoulders. And what you naturally, intuitively want to do is you want to end that feeling. And so some people, based on their story, based on their background, they'll try to end that feeling by powering up and taking over. You know, and they'll say, well, I'm the one who's been here the longest, or I'm the one who has the best biblical justification, or I'm the one who has this position. And they'll say, this is what's so and you need to follow. And really what they're doing, really, and they have no idea, is they're trying to relieve their own internal discomfort. And other people, on the opposite end of that, they will just step back, right? They'll be like, oh, this conflict is happening. It feels gross inside my gut. I mean, they're not thinking that. They're not even conscious of this. But they will acquiesce, or they'll quiet down, or they'll remove themselves from the situation so that they don't have to be a part of the conflict. And so you have churches with leadership teams trying to make decisions, and they can't make a good, clean decision because people won't talk about what's really going on because they aren't even aware of it. They just know they feel bad, they feel uncomfortable, and they need that discomfort to stop. right? And the reason that's happening is because we don't have tools or language or familiarity with talking about our emotional state in the church and our emotional relationships and what that means. You know, like, it shouldn't be a valuated statement to say, Clint, in that last interaction we had, you said something that hurt my feelings and I'm a little angry right now. Right? That should not be a value-laden statement. But you know that if you and I were sitting in one of the board meetings we've been in and somebody said that,
we've been there.
It would be a disaster.
Yes,
right?
It would. It has
Nobody
been.
Nobody would know how to handle it.
I've been in those board meetings, as have you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, what I've been learning from the book, and we've been messaging a little bit in the last couple of weeks as we were trying to set this interview up, the idea that spiritual maturity and emotional maturity are intrinsically connected. I can't remember who the author's name is, but one of the quotes that you come up with in the first chapter or two, I think, is someone says, you can't be spiritually mature and at the same time be emotionally immature. And that quote really
hit
me.
That's Pete Scazzaro, who is one of the pastors who's really doing great work in this area. He has a number of well-known books. The most famous is Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, which I highly recommend. And that quote actually was one of the keystones that kicked off my journey. Because, you know, here I was at the point when I began into this process. You know, I've got 15 years of ministry under my belt. I've been a Christian my whole life. I've been in church my whole life. I've got a college education. I've got training in these things. You know, and so to be told, hey, if you aren't growing emotionally, then you aren't as spiritually mature as you think you are. To be told that was almost offensive to me, you know. And then again, when you're offended, that's a signpost that something is happening emotionally inside of you that you need to pay attention to, you know. And so that really pushed me down a path of exploration. Why would that be? How could it be? Well, I have a friend that made the comment that he's done a lot of pastoral care and a lot of marital counseling. And one of the comments that he made is, in the context of marriage counseling, when you give broken people marriage tools, they just use them to beat each other up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's what also happens in the church, right? Our discipleship process in most churches is largely intellectual. And so we train people in theology. We train them in methods of Bible study. We train them in methods of prayer, right? We don't generally train them experientially in prayer. We teach them intellectual ideas about prayer, right? And so they learn more and more things. They learn more and more justifications. They learn how to explain their theology. They learn where certain passages are in Scripture so they can cite those in a conversation. But if they're still emotionally immature, what's going to happen is they're going to use all of that in self-justifying ways. So we're giving them all these great tools that make them look like great Christians. But when it comes to those uncomfortable moments of interior discomfort, they're going to use those tools as a way to protect and self-justify. And in fact, they won't be doing godly things. And that's just the state of the church right now. Like, the church is having a very hard time having complicated, nuanced conversations about lots of topics. Pick your controversial topic. And we're having a very hard time having difficult, nuanced conversations because we get so uncomfortable. And we feel like we might be losing something or losing face in the culture or told that we're wrong or, you know, we've invested all of our lives in one particular stream of theology. And what if that stream of theology isn't the end-all, be-all thing? And what will that feel like? And that is so uncomfortable that we either have to power up to prove we're right so that we can feel okay again, or we acquiesce and step back so that we can feel okay again. And yet neither of those attends to the real issue that there's something going on in our heart, which very well may be the Spirit of God trying to move you to a place of growth, a place of deeper intimacy, but the only way there is through this discomfort. And if you can't face the discomfort, whichever it is, the discomfort of grief or sadness or jealousy or anger, if you can't face that and experience that, then you're just going to be you're going to be in denial, you're going to be self-justifying, you're going to be coming up with reasons why you're right, and never growing.
Yeah, we talked about the story of Job. I mean, could you apply that paradigm to the book of Job? You know, he had this is what my friend Gary Hayes called, he had a theoclasm, where his categories of God didn't fit anymore, and he had that emotional breakdown. But for him, all he could do was argue that he was right. He hadn't sinned, and therefore that's where he went, and he just stubbornly clung to this, to that narrative. As you say, this is the story, and I can't see any other way out of this problem, you know, for whatever reason. He couldn't admit that maybe his worldview was inadequate. His box was too small. I don't know.
And we see that in the church. Well, even more interesting, I think, to think about the emotional dynamic is thinking about that little community that came around Job with his friends.
Yes.
And they're sitting around him and they're seeing what's going on in his life. And the only response, like, they cannot sit with him in his sadness. They can't validate his sadness. They can't talk about the grief that he's experiencing. The only thing they can do is say, well, you know, this must be happening because you have some untended sin in your life. And the reason that you respond that way when you're in the face of someone's pain, like, there's only two reasons. One is that you have to validate that you're right so that you don't feel the discomfort of the fact that your knowledge of God is insufficient. Or you're afraid, because if we acknowledge that Job is a righteous man and this kind of horrible nightmare can happen to him, then what might happen to me and my family? I mean,
exactly.
I'm not nearly as righteous as Job.
Yeah,
and
if
Job is a righteous man can experience this, then all bets are off for me. And so in both of those scenarios, we're going into an emotional denial where the godly thing, the thing I think that would be like Christ, would be for those friends to have sat with him and listened to him and acknowledged his pain and his suffering and his questions and just have been present with him and allowed he and God to work through that circumstance together. I think in the story of Job, Job ends up going through that painful tunnel with God, and it seems like comes to a place of reconciliation is probably not the right word, but comes to a place where he is content in the hands of God.
Yeah,
but that didn't
means.
Happen. That did not happen because his community helped him.
Yeah, they may have hindered his growth. I don't know. Well, going back to this point about people who are emotionally immature but somehow striving for spiritual maturity all the while overlooking that emotional side. I mean, one of the things that I've found really helpful from your book is this idea that our emotional immaturity is so often tied with some of the bad theology that we get in many churches, isn't it? This idea
yeah.
that God doesn't have emotions. He's the unmoved mover. He's the uncaused cause. He's impassible, you know. And you as a Christian, emotions are suspect. Emotions are fickle. You know, you shouldn't trust them. And therefore, to be a mature Christian, you really need to become like Mr. Spock in a way. Emotionless, dispassionate.
Right.
It's all about the reason and rationality. And yet, clearly that's got to have stunted the spiritual maturity as well as the emotional maturity of so many Christians in churches. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's the same dynamic that you think of, you know, in so many of our cultures that are so masculinized and patriarchal. You know, we have this cultural experience where little boys grow up and the people around them let them know in no uncertain terms that little boys are not supposed to cry when they're hurt, right? And so their
yes.
friends rib them and they get made fun of and their mom will say, there, don't cry. And their dad will say, shake it off. And nobody's like sitting down with the kid and saying to their face, you know, you can't cry. Boys don't cry. But it's just in the air. And over time that gets internalized. And when they feel that sadness, which is a natural human response, and when tears begin to come, which is a natural biological response, also shame comes, right? Because now it's not just they're having a natural response to the loss, they're also experiencing shame, which they picked up from this cultural experience. Well, exactly like that, our church in the air has some ideas about God that if you are a good person in the church, you know that you want to be like Jesus. You know,
yes.
what would
that
Jesus
means.
Do?
What would
right?
You,
we have all these songs.
Yeah.
We have all these hymns about becoming like Christ. I want to be like Jesus, you
yeah.
know, more of him, less of me. That's the goal. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're also taught that God is this distant power, then in your mind, even subconsciously, is this idea implanted that to become more like God means to become more removed, more distant, less connected from real everyday life and more connected with spiritual things. Like, we kind of get this image that the saints in the church are like the retired people who have time to spend 5 hours a day in prayer and 3 hours a day reading scripture, and then they go out and have quiet time weeding their garden, and then they go out and they do some active service, and they just never are ruffled, and bad things happen, and they just sing hymns. You know, they just never, that's a really spiritual person. We all subconsciously look at that, and we just know that's not us, but that's the thing we strive for. And so then when those feelings, those natural feelings occur, not only do we feel the feelings, but we feel shame. And if the shame is powerful enough, we repress the feelings. We don't go there because we want to be like Jesus. I mean, here's something that I thought of writing the book. I grew up in a church that, for one reason or another, it's a whole interesting discussion we could have, but for one reason or another, the discussion of martyrs was pretty common. Like, growing up as a kid, we heard lots of stories about the martyrs, right?
See, yeah, your favorite book.
And one of the things, what?
That's good. Your favorite book must have been Fox's Book of Martyrs then.
Right, yeah.
Here's some bedtime reading, so Mark.
Right, I know. Yeah. Right. Well, one of the things that I recall very clearly as a child hearing these stories is about these situations where these martyrs, maybe famous Christians, you know, John Wesley or who, I don't remember who all was martyred, but, you know, well-known heroes of the faith, that they're taken up and they're put on the stake, they're tied up on the stake, and the fires are licking at their feet. And what are they doing? They're singing hymns.
Oh, yes.
Right? They're singing hymns, and they're praising Jesus, and they're evangelizing until their very last breath. Now, I will not for a second get in the way of the fact that God may, in a moment of martyrdom, give an allotment of grace that allows something to happen that is above and beyond what normal people expect. I believe God can do that. But sure. I'll tell you the backside of that story that I experienced as a child. The backside was this. Super spiritual people are so spiritual that they don't even feel fear.
Yeah, or physical pain, right? Apparently.
Right? They just sing hymns, right? Whereas if I was a normal person and I, you know,
screaming.
I burnt my finger on the stove,
yeah,
I'm not singing hymns, right? I'm not blessing the Lord in all circumstances. I'm feeling pain, excruciating pain. And we've painted this picture in the church that that's the goal.
Yeah.
To become more spiritual, to become that kind of person who transcends emotional response. And that is not biblical. There's no evidence of it in the history of human behavior. It is simply mythology. And it gets in the way of intimacy with each other and intimacy with God.
Yeah, it's got to be legendary, hasn't it? Well, now, and you do anticipate this in the book because you talk about the fact that Jesus had emotions and that God has emotions. And, of course, you can hear the people, the reactions coming straight away. The second you say God has emotions, well, it's explained away. It's an anthropomorphism. You know, these are
right.
Not actual real emotions like you and I have. They are just attributes, actually. You know, God's love is explained. That's actually more like benevolence. It's just not a feeling he has, but it's just sort of part of his character. You know, and we don't want to attribute our bad human emotions onto God. And you can hear,
sure.
You can hear the, and I remember sitting in theology class and having this discussion when I was in seminary. You know, we have to be really careful not to ascribe human emotions to God because our emotions are flawed and sinful. And, you know, we don't want a God who's capricious and who gets angry and just smashes things around. And that's the view of an angry God that many people have.
Sure.
Or he's so loving that he just forgives everybody and there's no issues with anything. You know, so you can see where people are going to have an issue the second you say, well, wait a minute, we have emotions because God himself has emotions. And we're like God in that sense. We're made in his image. He has emotions and so do we. What's wrong with saying that?
Well, see, we've done this thing in the bifurcation of human experience between reason and emotion. We've done this thing where we think that somehow reason is less likely to be corrupted by sin and emotion is completely corrupted by sin.
Yes.
Right? And that's ridiculous. Just logically, regardless of what your theology is, that is just logically ridiculous. If we are sinful and sin corrupts us as human beings, then reason is no more righteous than emotion. So that is just dismissed out of hand. And then the fear that you talked about, you know, those seminary professors that warned us of ascribing human emotions to God, two problems with that. First off, what if the situation is not ascribing human emotions to God? What if our reality is that God has ascribed godly emotions to humanity?
Yes.
Right? That we have emotions because God has emotions. We experience this. This is a way of knowing. This is a way of experiencing the world that God has wired into us. That is a different modality of knowing, but it's a system God's given us because it's part of the way God experiences the world. And the fear that those professors are responding to, like, we don't want a God who's a capricious, who gets angry and just randomly blots people out. Well, I get that fear. But the reason that we have that fear is because our experience of anger is seeing sinful people act out in anger.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So why would that apply to God? If our theology is correct that God is without sin, then surely God is big enough to experience emotions without flying off the handle, right? Surely God is if we believe, you know, the classic omnis, you know, that God's omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, if those things are true about God, then God can know and experience an emotional state without having God's character undone by it. And we just don't know what to do with that, right? We don't know what it looks like for a person to be angry and loving at the same time. We don't know what it looks like for a person to be jealous and loving. We don't have a model for that. And yet, I think we do have a model for that in Jesus. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to read Scripture with a lens looking for these emotional interactions so that we can understand that the way we experience emotions is the issue. It's not that emotions are wrong or flawed or sinful. It's that you and I can very easily do wrong or flawed or sinful things with the emotions we have.
Exactly.
In exactly the same way that we can do wrong or flawed or sinful things with our great ideas and our great theology.
Yeah, it's so true. And I like what you talk about in the book. You said that when you actually look back over your life and the major life decisions that you made, you thought they were all rationally, you know, on paper, all the logic and all the argumentation. But the truth is, there was an emotion attached to those decisions that really was driving those actions. So emotion is incredibly powerful. I mean, I jotted one of the quotes down. You said, without emotion, reason is crippled. The fact is, if you're like Mr. Spock, completely emotionless, actually we don't want to be like Spock. We need some of Captain Kirk in there to bring us the emotion and the passion to make to do some activity, to do some action, because in that's emotions drive us to do things. Sometimes they're destructive and harmful, but we don't know how to interpret them most of the time, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, that was one of the big paradigm shifts for me, you know, that I grew up a very head-oriented guy, you know, thinking very much about reasons and justifications and feeling superior, I think, in some ways, to people who were more intuitive and more emotional. And as I began to study what we now understand about the way the brain works and what happens in the brain during emotional responses, I was just stunned to learn that what we call reason and what we call emotion are really two parts of the same system and that they cannot function independently of one another. You know, one of the things I refer to in the book is a story of a man named Elliot who is brought to a well-known neuroscientist because over the course of several years, he loses basically everything in his life. He had a brain tumor. The brain tumor was successfully removed. Everybody was thrilled and thought he was back on track for a great life. And over the next few years, he lost everything. He lost his job several times. He lost his family. He lost his life savings. And people couldn't figure out why, because he was intelligent, he could articulate cause and effect, he could talk about the reasons why you would make a certain decision and not make another decision. And when he was evaluated by this neuroscientist, what they discovered is that in the removing of the cancerous lesion, there was a damage that was done in a certain part of his brain that disconnected his emotional processing center from his reasoning processing center. And what was happening was he was doing the Mr. Spock thing. He was rationally evaluating the data that was coming into his brain, but he had no capacity to assign weight or value to any of that information. And so he would get stuck doing even simple tasks like trying to decide which file folder to file a paper in, because he'd like do a whole list of pros and cons and he'd do the whole thing, and he couldn't actually cross the line of making the decision.
Yeah.
And what came out of that experience was this hypothesis that emotions actually are the thing that allow us to finally make a decision and move forward. And then a lot of further studies have been done since then that have demonstrated that our body response, our perception of the world around us, we experience emotion in our body before we have any conscious awareness that we're feeling the emotion. And that is just completely backwards from what I was taught growing up, from what I heard in the church, from even what seemed intuitive to me, right? And so here we find that our emotions are a central part for experiencing the world. Well, if God designed us that way, then why is it that we have trained ourselves to go through life hopping on one leg?
Yeah.
Right. We've elevated that one leg. That's the holy leg. That's the righteous leg. That's the mature leg. And people who use the other leg are somehow more immature or less trustworthy or whatever. Well, that's ridiculous. Like, this is a part of who we are. It's how our brains and our bodies work. Growing up in Christ does not mean becoming less human.
Yeah.
Right.
And
it would be absurd to think that the more spiritual you are, the less you're going to use your right leg.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's no difference.
Yeah, I like your analogy, what you talk about. You know, it's like you're given a map, you're given a road map, but what happens if the map is incorrect? The map by which we live our lives, you know, we're given maps by our parents, by our authority figures, by people we look up to, as we grow up, but those maps aren't always accurate as to how to live our lives. And to maybe throw away that map and get another map, that's incredibly difficult. It's very hard. It's very hard to change, isn't it? I mean, you know, and I'm looking at this and I'm going, actually, yeah, a lot of the maps that I was given as a young guy growing up are deeply flawed. There's some serious problems.
Right.
And I could see where I've gotten off track in my life because I've been following this map, you know, or my life script, to put it another way. This is the person that I need to be. This is how I need to react in these certain situations. And who says that's what I have to do? I don't have to do that, you know?
Right.
But yet we just do it unconsciously because like you say, we're not really in tune with our emotions. We don't know why we're doing half the things we're doing most of the time, I think. You know, it's just react. You know, and then when we break it down later, you might think, now, why did I fly off the handle? Why did I say that to that person? Why did I react so out of proportion to the circumstance? There's a lot of stuff going on in there, and we don't want it's that check engine light's on. We don't want to find out what's under the hood.
Right. Well, and that right there, that situation you've described, that is the arena where spiritual growth happens.
Or it can happen.
You know, and we've right, well, but we've told people that to grow in Christ, you need to learn more scripture, learn more theology, you know, volunteer more in your church. Now, those are not bad things. They're fine.
Yeah.
But you as a human being, that God made, you will not grow until you can begin to process those very things, right? The benefit of me volunteering in the sound system, the benefit of me volunteering with the sound team at church is not primarily that there's good sound. It's that I get to work with a community of people, and in that community of people, be shaped. And part of being shaped is you bump up against one another. You have these exchanges, and then are you looking, under the lordship of Jesus, are you looking at those experiences and going, why did that happen? Why did I respond that way? Why did I feel like when I had made a decision about that mic placement and another guy came over and moved the mic, why did I suddenly feel angry? That's ridiculous. Mic placement. Why would it make me feel angry, right? And I reflect on that, and all of a sudden what comes up as I reflect on it is I want to be seen as competent. I want people around me to see me as someone who knows what they're talking about. And God reaches into that and brings it up and says, see, look, here's a little idol in your heart. Like, you have found value by being seen as an expert. And when somebody treats you like you're not an expert, you rise up inside of you with anger. And that anger is a flag. It's pointing you to this place in your heart that you need healing. You need restoration. You need the Spirit of Christ to grow you up so that you can be satisfied without being seen as an expert. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's spiritual growth, what I described there. But a lot of us will never go to that place because we don't want to touch those awkward or painful feelings.
It's true. And on this subject of feelings, I mean, what you say is our emotions, our feelings actually always tell us the truth. You know, and that I could see where that could be a very problematic statement for somebody. It was for me when I read that. It's like, wait a minute, my feelings, my emotions are actually always telling me the truth. The problem is I don't know how to interpret those emotions and those feelings. I don't understand what the roots are, what the connections are, why I'm reacting the way I'm reacting in this moment. You know, and that's really challenged me to start thinking, now, wait a minute, what emotion am I feeling right now and what's going on? You know, and to talk through, I think it's critically important to talk that through with that community that you just described, isn't it? You need the supportive community.
You have to, right? You have to have the tools to have the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, that statement is clearly intentionally provocative. I want people to think and be challenged. And yet it really gets at a truth that has been really helpful to me, and that is that every emotion that you have is bringing you truthful information about the circumstances that you find yourself in or the inner landscape of your heart. Right. And so people, when they hear it, they immediately go to worst case scenarios. Are you saying that I should just follow my feelings and that's always the true and right thing? No, I'm not saying that. So let's have a hypothetical worst case scenario. Right. Some guy in your church, comes to you as a pastor and confesses that he's feeling desire. He's feeling attraction toward a woman that's not his wife. Right. And you as a pastor, you're like, well, you've got to resist those feelings. Like, you've got to ignore that, repress that. You need to step away from that. You need to keep your covenant with your wife. That is temptation. Okay. That's what most of us would do. Well, here's the funny thing. The feeling that he's having is telling him something true. Now, the true thing is not that he should leave his family and go marry this other woman. That's not the true thing. The true thing is that there is something in him that is drawn to that other woman for a reason. What is that? Is the intimacy in his marriage broken down to the point that his heart is aching for intimacy? And maybe what needs to be looked at is how to help his wife and him come together in a healthier relationship. Is he feeling pain and stress in his life, and that's causing him to want to seek pleasure, and he's not feeling that at home. Home's a stressful environment, and so he's wanting to seek pleasure, and he has this great relationship with this other woman, and it always feels good. You know, is the truth that's being told that he's being motivated to medicate painful feelings in his life? Like, there's something, this desire that's come up in him is telling him something true. The mature thing is not to just press it down and say, let's never talk about that again. The mature thing is to hold that up and look at it and say, what is going on in my heart and in my mind where these feelings are coming up, right? And now I don't have to act on it. I don't have to go commit adultery. I can look at that and say, what's happening and how can I address that? You know, and that's the kind of worst case scenario that people are worried about. When I say your emotions always tell you the truth, they immediately think, oh, you are saying follow your emotions. That's always the godly thing. No, not at all. I'm saying your emotions are a check engine light on the dashboard of your heart. And when that light goes off, you need to pull the car over and you need to ask, why is this light flashing? What is going on that's causing this light to flash, so that I can respond to that in a way that's life-giving and healing?
Yeah, and the truth is we need that supportive community around us, don't you? That guy needs to talk to somebody before he goes and has that affair. You know, so hopefully he can feel that there's enough, at least enough of a safe place with a pastor, with a someone that he can trust, that isn't going to judge him, isn't going to, you know, flip out and actually walk down that road with him, you know. That's my question, I guess, as far as where do you see this book kind of the target audience? You said, I hope the pastors read it. So obviously you have an intended reader there. Who else should read the book, and what would they get out of it?
Well, I mean, the starting place for the book is my own story. And so I come to the conversation of emotions as somebody who, because of my story, because I'm a childhood trauma survivor, because I'm a type A personality, lots of explanations in my story, because of that, I was in a place where I was very disconnected from my emotions. And that bore a lot of painful, destructive fruit in my life. And so I came to this needing to find healing and reconnection to my emotions. And so certainly, people who share that experience are probably going to connect most deeply to the book, because that's my story. But the material that I share in both the Bible study about emotions in Scripture and in the practical study about what we understand about how emotions function in the body and the brain, that material will be helpful to anyone who struggles with emotion, whichever side. You know, the other side of the coin is people who feel overwhelmed by their emotions. They feel like their emotions are out of control. You know, they feel like they try to make a good decision, but then something sweeps in and knocks them off path, and it always feels impulsive and emotional. Well, those people need to understand this stuff as well, and I think would find great help. The book is basically saying, if we look under the hood together and understand what's happening, not be afraid of it, but understand it, then that gives us freedom to create a space of response so that we can understand what happened to us and then choose an intentional response to it that's life-giving. And so then the third group then, of course, would be people who work with people. So pastors and counselors and folks like that who are dealing with conversations that are emotional, they need to have a tool set, right? Many pastors simply don't have a tool set for having these conversations. You know, that hypothetical we talked about, when that guy comes and confesses to the pastor almost, unless you have a very unique and special pastor, almost 100% that pastor's reaction is going to be damage control, right?
Yeah, we can't let this get out.
You need to not talk about this with anyone. I need to give you some exercises that you can do with your wife so that you can get connected to her. You guys need to start having a date night. You guys need to pray for each, pray with each other at breakfast in the morning. I'm going to pray for your marriage. You need to pray for your marriage. Like, the pastor is going to go into fix-it mode. I got to save this marriage, right? And that will not solve the problem.
Yeah, just damage
because
control,
no matter,
isn't it?
Right? You have to go into the conversation. And so to be able to tell that guy, number one, feelings are not wrong. Feelings are natural responses. And so the fact that you're feeling attracted to another woman, you know, you don't even feel shame about that. Like, that's a real thing that happens. It's something that happens naturally. Now, what are we going to do to talk about that? Why are you feeling that? You know, where's that coming from? How are things going in your relationship with home? How are things going at work? And the pastor then, non-anxiously, like, that's the thing the pastor can't do. If the pastor freaks out, they freak out. You know, and then either they're going to back off and say, oh, that was a mistake talking to my pastor or something, right?
Yeah.
But if the pastor can non-anxiously be with them in the conversation and say, let's talk about what you're experiencing. Let's talk about why you might be experiencing it. Let's talk about what are you moved to do? Emotions move you to take action. What action are you feeling like taking? Let's talk about the consequences of that. Let's talk about whether that builds into who you want to be and who you want your kids to be. And like, all of those conversations, which are really crucial conversations, they cannot happen if we don't have a shared safe place to talk about it. And if your starting point is bad feelings are shameful, good Christians don't have bad feelings, then the conversation is over.
It's got to be over. Yeah, I don't see how, where is it going to go from there other than this guy's going to walk away feeling shamed, you know, and probably expecting to get that from the start of the meeting anyway, you know?
Right. And so he'll either go back to his wife and repress his desires, but that will bring damage into his marriage relationship, you know, or he'll begin to slowly distance and eventually he'll have some justification why his wife's a horrible, awful person and it's God's will that he should be with this other person. Like, I've seen that scenario, I can't even tell you how many times
in my life as a pastor. Yeah.
And it's all justification built around the fact that this person was not able to truthfully look at what was happening in their emotional life in time. They weren't able to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, going back to this issue of the toxic theology that we get, I mean, you say the pastors need to read this book, which is certainly true, but I think it's got to start in so many cases with people in leadership, church leadership.
Yeah.
You know, if they have a paradigm shift in terms of this whole issue about, you know, elevating reason over emotion and suppressing emotions and everything, they may themselves be emotionally immature, as you said before, but then finding the courage to talk about that in the church without it just descending into a touchy-feely, you know, because I can hear somebody saying now, oh, Mark, you've just written this book. Let's just all sit around in a circle and have warm, fuzzy feelings, you know, and that's not what you're saying at all. All right, well, I'm thinking we need to wrap this up. We're getting close to the time of the end. I thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. This is an amazing conversation that we've had about your book. How can people find the book? How can people get a hold of you and sort of explore this topic in more detail? What's
sure,
the
absolutely.
Best way?
So after the 1st of September, the book will be available, as they say, where fine books are sold. So you'll be able to find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Christian book distributors and maybe a bookstore near you, all of those places. If you want to learn more about the book, the best place to do that is at www.thewisdomofyourheart.com. That's a book landing page that will give you an introduction to the book. There's some videos there. There's also a page, because I'm a teacher, because I want to help people process things, there's a very extensive page of resources that support the book. So there's, you know, references to other books about certain topics. There's links to studies. There's video clips. There's all kinds of things that are organized chapter by chapter, so that if a particular chapter speaks to you, you can go to that webpage and find 4 or 5 additional resources that would support the material in that chapter so you can go deeper. And then in addition to that, I have a sequence of online course material that people can use. The first thing is a very simple 6-week course that's meant for either individual or group use, and it's very simple. Many churches like to have discussion-oriented small groups, and so basically it divides the book into 6 sections, and with each section there's a reading assignment, and there's about a 10-minute introductory video that's me talking about, you know, telling a story and talking about one of the key themes from that section of the book. And so then you'd play that video, and then there's some prompter questions, and you and your small group can discuss that material, and that would take you 6 weeks through the book. And then in addition to that, that's available. That will be available on the 1st, and it's free for anybody to use. And then in addition to that, there's going to be 3 more courses that will be coming out over the next quarter that will go deeper into 3 key growth areas of the book. One is going to be about this idea that our story that we hold about our lives shapes our emotions and the way that we live. And so one is going to go into that, and if that's intriguing to you, you'll be able to take that course and go deeper into understanding how that's true about you. The second course goes into the under-the-hood material about emotions. So if you're intrigued to learn more about how your body and brain and all the emotions work, that course is going to go deeper into that. And then the third one, the book ends with a journaling process called the 5 A's that's meant to help you process through an emotion to create that space where you can have a response that's life-giving and God-honoring. And that third, that last course will actually teach you in a much more in-depth way than the book, how to go through that process and how to use that. And all of that you'll be able to find at the book's website, www.thewisdomofyourheart.com. I also blog and write on a variety of practical spiritual living topics at my own blog, which is markallenshelsky.com. And I love to have conversations with folks about this stuff. I'm easy to find online. You can find me on Twitter, at Shelsky, S-C-H-E-L-S-K-E, at Shelsky, on Facebook, at Mark Allen Shelsky. Search Mark Allen Shelsky on Facebook. I'm, you know, in half a dozen other places as well, but Twitter and Facebook are really the places where people are, and so you can find me there. And, you know, I'd love to connect. I'd love to, you know, if a church wants to do a small group around the book, I'd be happy to do a Skype appearance with them and discuss the book with them. You know, if it's somebody that's nearby me, I'm happy to travel and visit. I really hope that this book can become a resource that empowers Christians and churches to really accelerate their growth of intimacy with each other, the way that they serve the community with integrity, and their relationship with God.
Wow, that is an amazing... I mean, I'm just sitting here listening to all these services that you offer with just the price of the book. And that's one of the things that that really struck me. You said, I'm a teacher. I have a passion for this subject and for helping people to process through these things. Because one thing I noticed right away is that at the end of every chapter, you've got 2 or 3 or 4 reflection questions. And I thought, okay, here's Mark, the teacher. Here, this is what I would do in a classroom setting. You always end the session with, you want the people who you know have experienced this to think and reflect. It's not just a book that you pump out and then it's on to the next book. There's a lot of additional resources, you know, that come along with it. So it's very helpful.
Those questions, those are key. You know, those are not random questions that some editor at the publisher came up with. Those are questions that are finely designed to help you process through the reality of your emotional life. And those questions have come out of long experience of leading groups and facilitating this conversation with people. If you read a chapter and you journal through those questions, I am convinced that you will have a significant experience of growth and change in your life.
And what more could you ask for? I mean, that's huge, man. I mean, change is difficult. There's no growth without change. There's no change without growth. But Mark's book, The Wisdom of Your Heart, will help you do exactly that. So thank you so much, Mark Allen Shelsky, author of this great new book that's coming out. Thank you so much, Mark, for being a part of this conversation, this podcast.
My pleasure.
This has been great. Well, thank you so much for joining myself and Mark Allen Shelsky as we discussed his new book, The Wisdom of Your Heart. That was an amazing conversation. I won't keep you too long because this has already been a long episode. I'll just say really quickly that you can get a hold of Mark, as he mentioned, on Twitter at Shelsky. And for more resources, you can check out thewisdomofyourheart.com. And you can get a hold of me in a variety of ways as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Preachers Forum. And it's the same on Instagram at Preachers Forum. You can find me as well on Facebook, facebook.com/The Preachers Forum. You can also send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com, and I will respond to you there. And I just want to say one last thing. You can also support the work of the Preachers Forum podcast if you found this content helpful at all or challenging. You can go to patreon.com/preachersforum. And speaking of preaching, next week, the following two episodes, I'm going to bring Gary Hayes back. He and I had a phenomenal discussion about this very subject of preaching. It's kind of ironic that the title of this podcast is The Preacher's Forum, but I don't spend that much time talking about preaching. But I'm going to bring you two episodes back to back as Gary and I talk about interpreting the Bible and preaching and a lot of other topics around that issue. So be sure and stay tuned for next week's episode with Gary Hayes and myself right here on the Preacher's Forum podcast.